back. WNST, Towson, Baltimore. And Baltimore Positive. We are positively doing some fun things here. We are we're making radio. We're doing a Friday, Purple Friday. Even though I got my purple rocking over here, Brian Eder is here. We're at the Chaucer, and you know, it took me a little while to learn how to pronounce it. Are you still struggling with that?
No, I've gotten that down. We get Chaser. We get. That's the big one. We get Chaser is the most common mispronunciation of it.
Well, the Chaser here would be that we got food, and I tell you what, I want to make sure that I get all my sounds good. We're all good. You have had this place for a year and a half, 2 years. How long has it been?
18 months. Yep, year and a half.
You have not had one normal day. No business in the city has had a normal day. We're in Highland Town. We're overlooking the Natty Bow guy, overlooking. I can see the Fort McHenry from here. It's a beautiful day. We both grew up here. So when I said we're going to do the first tour stop of the Maryland Crab Cake Tour, we're going to have crab cakes. How am I going to have room for crab cakes if you keep bringing all this food? Look at all this food he's brought for me.
I mean, you know, that is one of my favorite menu items. It's the tuna tostadas. I am a big fisherman, as you know. So I am always looking to eat something from the ocean.
Well, I'm going to get into that in a minute. I mean, I can't do radio with that in my mouth. The normalcy and the waiting for, because every time I'm in here, you're crowded. We kind of shut off the bar here on a Friday afternoon and the deck and open the windows. I think we're all waiting for normal. And I think when I said to you 8 months ago, I'm doing a crab cake tour, we'll kick off before the season. We're all going to Vegas. And then, you know, it's stumbling in, yep. But I think it's coming back. And I think the will of our people to come out, eat, drink, pour drinks, own restaurants, serve vodka, game day vodka in your case, that people are milling about. Football season is another thing. It's getting people out, right?
It is. And, you know, you're right. There hasn't been a normal day in the last 18 months. And for restaurants, you know, any restaurant that's made it through this, I feel like can make it through just about anything, because you know we've never in our lifetimes seen anything like this in any industry, but the restaurant industry that is reliant on people being inside and interactions with people. You know, we've never seen anything like this before, and I hope we never see anything like it again.
I had one of my best friends in the world, Julio Bermejo, who owns Tommy's Mexican Restaurant in San Francisco. I had him on because he's a Raiders fan, right? So was losing the football team, and then we got to talking about business and tequila and pouring drinks and berms outside and parklets, you know, all those things that you become familiar with, and I think everybody in the city, anywhere, become familiar with. Said that San Francisco's lost one-third of its restaurants. That's a restaurant town, right? For places like this, and I have these amazing relationships with people like you that open things in the middle of this. Evan Brown just opened his third place over in Catonsville, right? Another fisherman. He was in your Marlin open at the beach. It feels like the crab cake tour. I've had a crab cake every day ever since then. But there's something about in down times, and any, you know, economist would tell you, that's where opportunity exists, right? You know I'm about to sell my place. You know I'd like to sell it.
Right.
And I look at these rooftops over here, and my wife and I swear to God, people say, where are you moving? I think we want to move to the east side of Baltimore. People say, you're leaving the city, ain't you? And I'm not leaving the city. I'm going to move to a different spot in the city. We want outdoor space. But I feel a vibrancy in this specific neighborhood that you told me about a year, and you said, I'm buying a place up in Highland Town. I'll let you know. You didn't call it Highland, you call it Upper Kent, you know. Yeah. But I call this Highland Town, and I say that proudly. I love walking around. I think we say Highland Town's coming back or whatever, but it's coming back because people are betting on it.
It is, and it was a lot to bet on this restaurant, especially rolling into a pandemic. You know, to buy into a place, it was the scariest thing I've ever done because, you know, I'm staking my life savings on a place that wasn't doing particularly great before I bought it.
Which made it available.
Sure, made it available. Right. And my partner gave me a sweetheart deal to come in and to try and save the ship. Not to, you know,
well,
no pun intended.
Well, it's beautiful, right? I mean, sure. You know, it has a lot of benefits,
sure.
You know, that you would look at any location. Tell me what you've done the last 25 years, too, because everybody has crossed paths. You've either poured a drink for them or employed somebody. everyone has been in one of your places without realizing it.
Yes, I started bartending at Roto's in the late 90s for 4 years.
I was legal then, so you were serving me legal drinks then?
Yeah.
I started drinking in Roto's in the 80s, and I give him my wallet, and I'll show you that wasn't right.
Yeah, no. And then from there, I was at the Bay Cafe for 16 years.
Wow.
From 98 until they closed.
That's a lot of Jamaican me crazy.
It was. And I really cut my teeth as a bartender and as a manager there. And then I went to work for the Cordish Company for about 5 years, running PBR, their country concept after that.
I'm sorry. That music. Oh.
Yeah. Well, you know,
you didn't
get
the rock club? No.
Both. But the country club did better than the rock club, believe it or not.
I know.
It's a hot.
What was the rock bar called? Angels.
Angels Rock Bar.
Yeah.
And it's still there.
I was there the night it was open.
Yeah, it's still there.
I was there with Mickey the night it opened. Yeah.
And then I left and went to Lee's Pint and Shell and Tiki Lee's for a 3-year stretch and then bought into here.
Well, knowing all of that and having your own place versus running a place, this is a vision, right? So, I mean, people say to me, by the way, big appreciation to Maryland Lottery will become the sponsor of our Maryland Crab Cake Tour. And I've been explaining my vision for this because people, Nasty Nester Sports, this.
Right.
I was with the governor last week. What's the crab cake thing? What are we doing? We're going to try your crab cake. My concept was that the neighborhoods are being sold off to Clear Channel and corporate radio, corporate television, and newspapers. My idea was there are people here seeding businesses, and this is pre-pandemic, to what the potential can be. Some people came here and said, what's a chaser? And you came here and said, let me see the view, right? I mean, and now you're about to expand further upward and onward here, but seeing potential. Let's go back to the economics of when something's available, you say, I can take that AM radio station. I can take that little bar at the corner of Foster and Highland on the edge of Highland Town, and I can make that bigger than anybody else thinks it can be.
Correct.
Otherwise, I wouldn't be here.
Correct. Right. I'd be working. I would have taken another job as a GM for somebody else who was willing to take the chance. At some point, I decided it was time to bet on myself. It's not the location that I bet on, and the location helped, but it was, I think that I can take this location and turn it into what it should have been all along. And, you know, it's a matter of making changes, bringing in good staff, having a vision for what it should be. And that's, you know, it's been a process. But for me, the good thing that came out of the pandemic, honestly, was I've had 18 months of basically a soft opening. Had we been open at full capacity the entire time, I would have had to have hit the ground running with 250 people in this restaurant potentially every night and not having worked the bugs out ahead of time. What we've done is we've tried things. Things have worked. Things haven't. And it's given me at 25 and 50% capacity the opportunity to work through what I know works and what I know isn't working. So I've gotten a little bit of a mulligan on some things where normally in a normal atmosphere business-wise, I wouldn't have had that chance.
Brian Eater is my guest. We are at the Chaucer. It is sort of our, it's a soft opening. It's a soft opening of the Maryland Crab Cake Tour. I said all along I was going to do this crab cake thing, and I sat right over there, and I told you twice, told you back, and it was winter, so I had my jacket on. My wife and I walk here, and people think that's, if like Chris DeBarton. Chris, I live at the Inner Harbor. Would you walk to the Inner Harbor right now with me from here? Would you think about doing that, or would that be too, no, hell no.
Right.
Nobody would do that. We do it every time we come here. I think I parked that here for the first or second time ever because I walk. And people say, hey, I stay thinner. I just walk a lot. It is a little bit of a walking city in this part of the town,
sure,
right? That people walk to here from all sorts of places. And I think that I don't want to be crass, but you're trying to be the Cheers, right?
Like, sure.
Yeah, you're 100%. Trying to be that neighborhood place that this was always known for that, whether you call it Upper Canton or Highland Town, right?
And I feel like, you know, we get 60% of our business is walk-up. They're people from a 10-block radius, which is great because it's easier for them to come here 3, 4, 5 nights a week. And the fact that Upper Canton, Highland Town, whatever you want to call it, is starting to have some cooler bars in it again, is great. You know, Cardinal Tavern, which is 4 blocks to our south, was just recently purchased by somebody else who opened it up, reopened it. She's doing well. Knotty Pine, which is to the east of us, is doing well. Hawks further east is starting to do well. Well, now people are coming here, and they're traveling from one bar to the next like they used to do at the square. Now they'll come and park here and walk to the Cardinal, walk back, and then go to Knotty Pine.
But this isn't a disco. This is a, grown-up place.
It's a restaurant, correct. It's a restaurant that, you know, more of a, if you want to call the bar part, we're more of a sports bar than anything else because, you know, nightclubs come and go. Restaurants have longevity. You know, there are restaurants that have been around 30, 40, 50 years in this city, and that's what we're aiming to be.
You haven't had a moment in here with, like, a big Raven game yet, right? Like, you know what I mean?
No.
Like, in that way, this season's going to be that.
Yeah.
Man, these injuries, man, right?
Yeah.
I mean, this is...
Yeah, and, you know, I'm wondering, is it the playing surface? Is it the way that they're training? It's odd to me that, you know, it's so many.
Well, Thursday's the worst day in the history of the franchise, and, you know, on the eve of going to, you know, and then the Chiefs, you know, so we're in. You want me to call it Upper King? Because Highland Town is not purgative to me.
Brewers Hill.
There you go. I can see Mr. Bell.
Yeah,
all right, so Brewers Hill, is that what you want?
That's what the real estate agents are calling it now.
Not Upper Canton. Upper Canton's that way? Where's Upper Canton?
I don't know if there is an Upper Canton anymore. You know, it's just like I live in Federal Hill, and anybody short of Locust Point calls their house Federal Hill, whether it's Federal Hill or not. You know, it used to be South Baltimore, and then Federal Hill, and then Locust Point. Now everything, you know, on one side of Locust Point is now everybody's Federal Hill. It's the same thing.
We're all in it together, man. We got Purple Friday going here. We're going to be doing these shows each and every Friday. We're at Costas next Friday with Johnny O. We got some other guests coming by. I actually have a Highland Town guest coming to Dundalk to tell some old Highland Town stories because he couldn't make it today. Dundalk, you know, this dream of owning businesses and you chasing around, you know, big dreams and running places and being a part of the Bay Cafe and bumping into each other. We played Little League together in Dundalk. You know Costas well and all that. There's something about the city right now with sports. You were a nerdy baseball kid. I was a nerdy baseball kid. We've talked about autographs and Eddie Murray's stance and playing wiffle ball and all of that stuff. Sports. Yeah, you know, as you get a little older, maybe a little different. You've moved into a different sport. You got your fish here.
Yep.
You're sort of famous for not, you know, doing an adult thing, not golf, fishing.
Yeah, I am a tournament fisherman. That's correct. I picked it up at 30. And
so you didn't fish at Bear Creek like I did as a kid?
I did, but not, you know, it was, you know, bass and some perch. And never did I think it would turn into offshore.
Did you crab ever?
I did, on the Steel Pier, off of Wise Avenue.
See, my wife and I were at Costas the other day grabbing some crabs. She made crab soup today, dude. Like, I've had crab every day since August 1st. And I love it. I'm going to have a crab cake here with you. And how's your crab cake, by the way? Best in town?
No, I wouldn't say it's the best in town. I'm going to be honest. Listen, I'm an honest guy. I think that our crab cake is a solid stand up to anybody's crab cake. I don't think it's the best in town, but I think it's a solid B.
Well, maybe what if I ate it and I thought it was the best in town?
I would love
question
to hear
my
that.
Taste.
No, but you know, listen, everybody's palate's a little bit different, and I am a crab cake guy.
You're Berkshire, and I'm Colgate. I just want to get that out because people are going to say you're Dundalk, but we grew up sort of rival neighborhoods, but I played Little League in your neighborhood,
correct.
And it's kind of all melds together all these years later, right?
Yeah. And I...
Were you Patapsco?
No,
you were Dundalk. You were Dundalk.
Yeah, I'm an Al.
All right. Just me. I had to explain that to my wife because we were driving down Wise Avenue. Yeah. Well, I was telling you, we came back from Costas, and we went across the Bear Creek Bridge. Is it Seasoned Mariner? Is that what it's called there on the left here?
Yeah.
I fished, or were crabbed right there.
Yeah.
It was just like a package goods store in 1978.
I remember,
right? So that's the spot we crabbed. My parents wouldn't let me fish at Back River.
Right. We would ride our 10 speeds from Berkshire, either down to... what's the park there on the right-hand side of Peninsula Expressway?
Chesterwood Park. Chesterwood, okay.
We would crab there occasionally, but then on the left-hand side of the Wise Avenue Bridge, there's a steel pier, and we would kind of sneak out onto that
steel pier. That's by the boat bar down there,
correct.
Right?
Yeah, yes.
Give me his name. I can't think of his name. It's okay. That's terrible, two Dundalk guys.
I know.
We'll come up with it in a minute.
Yeah, it's
got a brain fart. Don't have a boat.
Yeah, neither do I.
I
don't have time for a boat.
Hold on. You're a deep sea fisherman without a boat?
You find a good captain and find somebody who's good at their job and you charter a boat.
All right, I want to hear about this. All right, so I think I may have had you on after the fish incident last year.
Yeah.
give everybody the fishing thing, because you told me you got to go to the Marlin. Yeah. Evan Brown over at State Fair. You got to go. You got to check this out. And, you know, Trump flags aside,
yep.
and we have that problem in East Baltimore in some directions as well. I went this year, and I was blown away by how neat it was,
yeah.
and how you taught me a little bit ahead of time. And so, I mean, the boats come in. Yep. You have the blue fish, the white fish, the yep. upside-down yep. fish, the red. So your fish story from last year sort of made you did the rounds here in town.
Yep, we did.
Early in the week, you caught a what and how and
yeah. So our boat caught a white marlin on the there was the hurricane last year extended the tournament to 7 days, first time ever. Because Tuesday and Wednesday the days were unfishable because of a hurricane, so they extended the tournament. On Friday we caught a 77-pound white marlin, and it sat in first place Friday. And Saturday, it would have been at the time, had it held, the biggest tournament payout ever of $2.9 million.
How do the payouts work? Because I heard everybody talking money, and I saw a gigantic fish get brought up, and, yep. and people were, oh, that's worth $3 million. You know? And I'm thinking to myself, I know, but it's a consolidation thing, right?
Sure.
Like, so the boat gets X amount, and sure. you have a 5% or 10%, whatever
yeah.
it is, right?
And so there are different levels, and in order to be eligible for, like, say, level
You know what?
C.
I want to eat this, and
sure.
you talk.
Right? To be
this
eligible.
Is the tuna you caught, right? This is fresh, right? You brought... No. Okay, just no. checking. No. Just making sure.
So to be eligible for a level in the tournament, you have to bet in said level. So when our fish was bumped to second place last year, the first place boat did not bet in the top. It's called a Calcutta. It was a $10,000 winner-take-all bet. There were 110 boats in it. So because we were the top weighing fish in that Calcutta, we took the full $1.1 million out of that Calcutta. The boat wound up winning $1.7 million. I had 2/3 of a share, so I wound up winning about $150,000.
That's a lot.
Yeah, it sure is. Uncle Sam took a good chunk of it, though.
Explain to me where the money... That's what I didn't understand. So it's fees. Each
Correct.
Boat pays.
Sure.
So it's just a big... pool game, you
sure.
put all the money in,
sure.
and then you go out and you fish.
And you could fish, potentially, the tournament for as little as $15,000. And I say as little as $15,000, but that's...
But five guys, 10 guys getting in, and that's
right.
a week.
Correct.
That's 5 days,
it's,
right?
You fish three out of five
three
days.
Three out of five, okay.
To get in, it's called across the board, and that's in every level. This year was $54,000. So that's split amongst the anglers on the boat. Well, on top of that, you pay for the charter. You pay for the boat because the boat's burning $1,500 worth of fuel a day. That money's got to come from somewhere.
So you get on these boats 4 a.m.
Yep.
You load them up. What is this chum? What are you doing to catch fish?
It's a trolling only tournament. So you're pulling the baits. You're pulling six rods with bait out behind the boat at a speed determined for what you're fishing for. Each fish, kind of the speed's a little bit different. So for white marlin, you're trolling 6 knots. For blue marlin, you're trolling 9 because they can swim a little bit faster. It depends on what you're targeting. And it doesn't mean you won't catch one at a different speed, but the captains know what they're targeting and what speed to troll for with those baits.
This is a very specific thing. Like, so I went fly fishing for the first time in my life on the tour. By the way, we're with Brian Eater. We're at the Chaucer. I call it Highlandtown. He calls it Brewer's Hill. You can call it Upper Canton. And we're fly fishing, and it's the first time in my life I had done it. I had said something to you about maybe I could jump on your boat and check it out. Evan, same thing. Both of you sort of made some sort of weird offer to me that I never accepted during the... But having looked at both of you at the end of the first day, and I was there at the pier Monday, and I saw you in your blue shirt and... Yeah. Out on the front, looking at boats coming in, and he was physically exhausted. Yep. Like, it's hard to fall asleep on me and be narcoleptic. He almost fell asleep on my face on the balcony there, watching all these fish get weighed. It looks kind of like strangely grueling in some way. And I have deep sea fish. I shared the picture with you. I caught this 70-pound Spanish mackerel out off the Great Barrier Reef. Only time in my life I ever did it. It took my arm a week to get. Because they put the belt on me, the whole deal. This is different, right? These are like cranks. I mean, sure. I saw these cranks on the back of these boats. And I'm like, that's a different gig than, like, you taking me and my wife, like, fishing somewhere in Ocean City where we're just looking to, like, catch fish, not whales.
Sure. And the thing is, you know, the tournament is run on the honor system. You know, they expect you to be a sportsman. They do give you, if you win, money. You do have to take a lie detector test in order to cash your check. But once an angler touches the rod, if we were on the boat and we hand the rod to you, it's you reel that fish in until we...
Well, you have video all of this, right? Sure. Everybody has a video of this now.
Sure, but there have been fish that have been disqualified because someone's touched the line. Or, you know, you can fish at 8... You can't fish until 8:30 in the morning. A few years back, a boat started fishing at 8:26. Their fish was disqualified because they were not fishing in the hours that you're allowed to fish during the tournament, and it came out in the process when they were taking their lie detector test. And
see, this is the thing that's interesting, right? I'm just a jackass staying on 14th Street.
Yeah.
I walk up. By the way, I got to get a beer. I'm in the mood. This is great. Tell me what this is.
It is our tuna tostada. It is
it's really good.
It's sushi-grade tuna, seared rare, served on a corn... tostada.
I know it's a crab cake tour, but I
yeah, no. Listen, like I said, that's my favorite item on the menu.
So I'm just like wandering around, and literally I was 10 feet away from where they weigh the fish. You know, where you come in that little plaza where all the homes and people are gathering, and I didn't understand it. You know, they don't hand your rule book. When you and I were kids, there was somebody at the ball game and says, all right, there's four balls, three strikes, this is first base. I didn't understand any of the parameters. And, like, people were trying to explain to me, oh, you see that blue flag coming in? That means they caught one and they released it. And I'm like, well, you'd have video and pictures and, like, all that, right? So,
sure.
How many fish do you catch that I don't even know about? Do things jump on the line that...
They do generally, but, you know...
Like when we used to catch eels.
Yeah, I mean, generally with the billfish, you know, you'll see if for every release, but because it's a prestigious thing to catch any kind of marlin, any kind of billfish, guys are going to fly their flags coming in. So they want you to know. And also,
the only way you catch this fish is to go 8 miles out there and have this equipment, right?
8 miles, yeah.
Is it further than that? Yeah. I don't, you tell me.
We were 96 miles off of shore.
Like Bermuda.
It was a 3-hour ride.
96 miles?
Huh? Yes. Those fish generally start. You don't start catching tuna.
This is what I didn't learn. Yeah. And I got interested, and I knew we were doing this. Yeah. Brian Eater's here. We're at the Charles. I might even take a break and like come back. I want to hear more. But like, I'm fascinated. This is truly when I have a wise conversation. Because I sat there for 3 hours, watched the fish get weighed, looked at the pretty girls, had a couple of beers, looked at people. I thought it was cool. But I didn't. It was like going to the bullfights in Madrid. I didn't know what the hell was going on. Yeah, I just bought a ticket.
Yeah, so you don't start fishing until generally you're 40 to 50 miles offshore.
I mean, my eyes are getting big and soft because I just don't know this. I mean, I'm ignorant, literally ignorant.
Yeah.
When did you learn all? You said you were 30 when you started doing this.
I was. When I was working at the Bay Cafe, the owner took the other head bartender and myself to Mexico as a bonus. And we fished. We went offshore fishing down there in Mexico. The following year, we started fishing a tournament in Mexico together. And that you kind of get the...
Okay, did you say offshore?
Yep.
I can show you the picture of me in 1998 in Australia. I went on a boat with four dudes, captain and a mate.
Yep.
Caught a big-ass fish, but we didn't have, like, the stuff that were on the back of these boats, right? Yep. So what would offshore fishing mean to you? If my wife and I were going to go out and do something like what I did in Australia versus this insane, I need to catch a 200-pound creature, just fishing, you know, how far off do you go?
Well, offshore is different in different places. You know, in Hawaii, when I fished in Hawaii, because these pelagic fishes, which are what they're called, marlin and mahi and tuna are called pelagics, they generally live in deep water. So the quicker the water gets deep, the sooner you'll find them close to shore. So when we fished in Hawaii, we were fishing 5 miles out of the marina because as soon as you leave the island,
there's a trench.
Correct. So you have to find the trench, and that's when you start finding those fish.
See, I even knew the word. I'm learning.
Learning. No, you're right.
But I'm more interested in it like I am in most things in life at this point. I mean, just going around just fly fishing, like seeing the lures that Dan was using and seeing the fish not being stupid. If it doesn't look like a fly, the fish won't hit it, right?
And the thing is that, you know, for people here in Maryland, it is the biggest billfish tournament in the world.
In the world?
In the world. Pretty prestigious thing. You know, and they
that's no Florida, no.
No, no. The biggest, there's another one in Cabo. It's called the Bisbee Black and Blue. And there was a point where it would, one year it was that, the next year it was the White Marlin. This year they added another $20,000 level, which took it up another $3 million to the tournament, which makes it by far the biggest tournament. This year they gave over $9 million in prizes. I want to say 90% of the money that's put into the tournament comes back out as prize money.
Well, you mentioned the captain in the very beginning,
yep.
Right? We talk about menus and food and ingredients, yep, and all that. The only way to catch one of these creatures and to win this thing is to have somebody that knows kind of how to find them, right?
Like, correct.
Literally.
Yeah.
And there's an expertise involved in that.
Sure.
That takes a lifetime, right?
Yeah. And there are some guys that have done it that are innately better than others. Some people, you know, there are skills that you can learn. And then there's always that person that's better at it just naturally.
Well, you got lucky last year, though, to catch,
sure,
a fish like that.
It's a huge amount of luck included in that. But I would take a captain with a lot of skill over a captain that was lucky all the time. Because your luck will eventually run out. A good captain's going to find you fish every time. It just may not be one that's big enough to win the tournament. You know, this year I fished the second tournament, the Mid-Atlantic 500,000. We had 9 marlin that we hooked in one day, my best day offshore ever. We caught 7 of the 9. 2 of them got off before we got them to the boat. But to have a chance at 7 in one day, chances are one of them...
That's skill. That's not luck.
Correct. Correct. And so you might happen to stumble over one that wins you money in a tournament once. But if you catch 30, the chances go up exponentially that you're going to catch one that qualifies, that's going to cash you a check in the tournament.
Well, you know, it just goes back to I got to go crabbing again. My friend Sam Tudor from Colgate has been offering me to go snakehead fishing.
Yeah.
He said that'll be fun for me.
It's a lot of fun. They fight great. They're easy to get to take a lure because they're so aggressive.
Mixed bag on whether they taste good or not.
I think that they taste pretty good. I'm a fan. But as a hunter and a fisherman, I don't like to take anything out of the food chain that I'm not going to eat. I'm not going to go hunt a giraffe, you know, because I'm not going to eat it. To me, I hunt or fish to feed myself first and foremost. You know, the other stuff, the tournaments come in secondary to all that.
Well, the one thing I saw when they brought in that gigantic fish,
yeah,
like, is they start filleting it,
yep,
right away, and it turns into sushi grade like this,
sure,
literally. But it was given to the food bank.
It was.
And that, you know, we talk about the Wise Markets. Is, by the way, our sponsors, Wise Markets, round up this month. It goes to the Maryland Food Bank.
Yep.
And we're trying to feed people. That's another part of this, that just being there, you witness things and you see things. But I didn't understand, like, the sport, the rules, the 8:30, the 96 miles offshore.
Yeah.
That sounds exhausting to me, and it sounds like something I probably shouldn't do. I should be way more committed than even I was in Australia that day, because that day in Australia kicked my ass.
Yeah.
And I caught a real fish, and it was, I've never been more exhausted than I was at the end of that day, literally.
And the thing is, you know, that it's my week vacation, or my 2 weeks vacation, because I fished, you know, 2 tournaments this year.
You did, like, a Nagshead one, right?
I did a partial, that was called the Big Rock, out of North Carolina, out of Moorhead City. I didn't fish the entire tournament, I only fished one day, but then I did fish the Mid-Atlantic, which is out of Cape May, New Jersey, the 2 weeks after the White Marlin Open. But it's work. It's, you know, you're taking your vacation to get up at 4 o'clock in the morning, ride out 3 hours on the boat, fish for 6 hours, and sit and stare at the baits in the water, because the bill of the fish looks like a broom handle coming out in the ocean, waving back and forth. And if you're inside having a beer or eating, you might miss that.
This is great. I'm learning. Keep going. I'll keep eating this journal.
You know, so you want to be out there. Everybody that's on the boat should be out there watching, because it might be your one chance at a fish that might win you $3.5 million. So it's work. And so the days that you fish, you're paying attention, and you're not. It's not that it's not fun, but it's work, and it's still fun at the same time.
Well, let me say this. As I stuff my face with the Chaucer and wipe off, I fly fished for 3 hours and actually sat on a rock because it was so slimy. And I kept, 10 o'clock, 2 o'clock, 10 o'clock, 2 o'clock cast, right? And I just kept watching, watching the fly. Do it again. I didn't catch anything. 3 hours. I can't imagine 100 miles offshore where all you see is glisten Captain Hook nothingness. Literally, right?
Correct.
Doing it all day, coming back, ass kicked sore with nothing.
Yeah, it happens.
See, like,
it's fishing.
This fly fishing thing was fun. It was beautiful. It was bucolic. There was moving water. There were trees. It was shaded. Mm-hmm. It was polite. It was genteel.
Sure.
You know, I mean, it was leisurely. I was tired, but it was leisurely. Yeah. What you're doing, that's not leisurely, man.
No, and it you know, it isn't easy, but if it was easy, everybody would do it. You know, and, you know, it's crazy to see. You know, they've only had one person who's won the tournament twice. Calvert Hall guy by the name of Tommy Hinkle, who's a school teacher that now lives in Berlin. He teaches at Stephen Decatur down there in Ocean City.
Well, he's living a good life.
Sure.
Yeah. He won.
But you know, very few people place or win once. It's almost unheard of to do it twice because the amount of skill and luck that have to come together for you to do it at this, you know, both is.
So the word is you've cashed your lottery ticket. Anything after this, you'd be like, wow.
I've been pretty lucky, though. I've tournament fished for 15 years now. I've fished in 18 tournaments, and I've cashed a check in six. So
that's one third.
Yeah, I've cashed a
that's
check.
That's almost as good as Danny Wiseman.
Yeah. And so, you know, so I'm more proud of the fact that I've placed in six tournaments than we won that big check in one, because that means that we've consistently either, you know, been in the right place, the right time, the right captain, and you know, that's what matters to me.
A couple things I learned. I had asked both of you about going out in the White Marlin, and both of you said, let me check. I'm not qualified,
right.
But I'm really interested in it from a journalism standpoint as to what that day is, but I'm not willing to. Maybe next year. I'm going to do 31 crab cakes in 31 days next summer, and I'm talking to folks about coming back down to Ocean City. So if I were to do that and it were to get built in, I would do it. My wife, like, thought about it, but she's gotten seasick. That's her transplant.
Yep.
Like, she has a little issue with that, and she said, dude, when you come back, you're going to be really wobbly up on a boat. Yeah. And I do have that. I took a little boat for an hour over to Smith Island when we had Smith Island cake. It took a little longer than that going back. We had a little chop. When I got back, you know, I mean, just that hour out on the boat, you have that magical feeling you can only have from being on a boat.
Sure. And the thing is, you know, 100 miles offshore, you're stuck. You're there for the duration
of the day. Your boat's like flying when you get out on the water, right?
Yeah, they're doing 30, 35 miles an hour. I mean, for a big 60-foot boat, you know, to have the power to push something that big that fast, yeah, it's. I mean, flying, yeah.
I wanted one more thing. Yep. Brian Eater's here. We're at the Chaucer. We're doing our Maryland Crab Cake Tour, having great conversations. We're going to have some other visitors here from, I call it Highland Town. They call it Upper Canton or Brewers Hill. First day on Monday, I get there, the big fish are coming in, and then the guy who does all the thing at the Marlin Open starts telling the story about this distressed boat.
Yep.
And you mentioned, you know, honor system, we all pay a lot of money to get in, all of that. That was one of the real incredible, like, days, maybe, of all the days you're on your water, right? Like, and it's one thing for me to hear about it, and I was there when you first told the story, 7 o'clock, whatever it was. I'm having a beer, looking at the girls, walking around, looking at the boats, doing all that, feeling it out. And then a couple hours later, I was drinking with Batman up at Fishtails, a couple, six blocks up, and I looked down on my phone after I had ahi tacos that were like this, tasty, and looked down on my phone, and somebody had sent me the video of it.
Yep.
And all of a sudden, this story that I heard 3 hours later, oh, they saved the boat, that's nice, good for them, becomes this, like, thing you see in real time, this boat going down.
Yeah.
And this is a boat you've been on a million. How the hell did that happen? I mean, that's a question I had.
Yeah, like, and from the story that I've, you know, gotten secondhand, a lot of times when you hook a big fish, the captain will put the boat into reverse because the line's going out the back of the boat. So you can't turn around and chase the fish. You have to back down. It's called backing down in reverse. Well, when that boat started backing down, one of the exhausts cracked. And so water started coming in the boat.
And once it starts, it doesn't stop.
Correct, because the bilge pump, there's a pump.
And it's quick.
Yeah, the pump that pushes the water out, they have a bilge pump, couldn't keep up with the speed that it was coming in. So within a matter of minutes, that boat sank. And they were lucky that another boat was close enough that, you know, they pulled them out in short order. Everybody got in safely, and the boat sank. But, you know, they...
Quickly.
Quickly. The good thing was
the video is frightening.
Yeah,
I mean the
yeah.
video is absolutely frightening.
The great thing,
it's heroic,
yeah.
literally heroic.
Yeah, and the great thing was the guys whose boat sank were able to find another boat to fish on for the rest of the tournament, so they didn't lose their tournament. And the guys who saved them for the first time ever were awarded an additional day to fish because when, you can fish 3 out of the 5 days in the tournament. So you have to call in by 9 a.m. and say, "Hey, this is Brian Eater's boat. We're not fishing today." If you don't call in by...
So you get 30 minutes free. You drive your 100 miles, you get out there, and you're like, "Ah, this sucks, we're leaving."
Correct. You have to call on the satellite phone, though, because the phone won't work.
Okay.
So it gives you the opportunity that if your boat breaks down on the way out, you could call and say, "Hey, we're not fishing today," and lose your day of fishing. But if you're not fishing, you go out and have a few cocktails the night before, and everybody in the crew's drunk, and you're not fishing the next day, and you all forget to call in, and you're fishing, whether you're out fishing or not. So that plays into it too. So the boat that was the boat that picked up the anglers whose boat had sunk, they were awarded an additional day to fish because they went to the rescue of people and they lost their day of fishing, which I thought was stand up by the tournament to do that because they were doing the right thing, and it would have been a really bad look for me to me had they lost a day of fishing for being good Samaritans.
Well, and saving lives, man.
Yeah.
I mean, this is crazy. Brian Eater's here. We've talked a lot about the Chaucer and Highland Town. We're going to be having some more guests. Deke Cohen's going to be stopping by talking about the Council Manic District. Also, Heidi Daniel from the Enoch Pratt Free Library. And I'm also going to try your crab cake. Where's the purple? Come on, man. I got orange, green. Sold out?
Yeah.
Tis the season,
hey,
right?
Hey, you notice?
It is a Purple Friday.
Unfortunately, you notice we have some orange left.
I'll take the green one for St. Patrick's Day.
I'm just set because of the Orioles. That's
dude,
a shame.
Dude, I'm going to show everybody my shoes, man. These are my – I have orange shoelaces and orange shoes on here.
You know, it's funny because you're mentioning your shoes. We're Dundalk boys, Owls. It's a good thing that Nike, in my eyes, has a relationship with Oregon because they make green and gold shoes all the time for Oregon. I buy green and gold Nikes, and I tell people they're my Dundalk shoes.
Let each fellow join our chorus.
That's
echo
right.
Far and near. There you go.
Yep.
I'm a Dundalk High Hall of Famer. I'm not getting any Hall of Fame. A few halls of shame.
Yeah.
But, all right. You need some gold on there. We're at the Chaucer. Don't call it the Chasser, but come by anytime. Second floor. We're open today. There's a Marlin up on the wall here. Yeah. Third floor soon?
Third floor as soon as we have the permit in hand. It was approved. The deck was approved by the zoning board. Now we're just waiting for the city to get us the permit. We cannot start construction until we have permit in hand, even though it is approved.
This is delicious, by the way. Tostada, tuna tostada.
Tuna tostadas.
And you got something. Pull that over here. Let's show everybody what that is. Because
this is the black and blue mac.
Oh, wow.
So it's our mac and cheese.
See, people have been trying to get me to the salad. Dude, I've been on the road. I gained 10 pounds on the road. I've lost 6 of it back until I showed up here today.
It's tough to eat well on the road.
An honest man. The crab cake here is really good, but not the best until I taste it. We're going to figure that out. We're going to do that a little later on. You're going to have your chef by? You're going to have some insiders here? You're going to come and talk about the menu a little bit?
Absolutely.
Well, I just want to know about the crab cake.
Yeah,
that's all.
Yep, I can grab it for you. Yeah, absolutely.
100%. So Jen and I have been, I talked to Chad over at Al Seafood about this, and I'll talk to Pete and Nick at Costas because we're going to be there for the second stop next Friday, excuse me, just about crab cake recipes. I've had so many different ones, different slurries, different techniques, different crab meat, that I like to hear the background. But Jen and I, and we're doing this at Wise Markets next Sunday, the 19th. Wise Markets at Fullerton, Rob Santoni store. That's the one right at Bel Air Road and 695. Across from Tully's. You remember, right? So when I say that, the old school people know. And we're doing crab cakes, and they're signature crab cakes. So they have a $6 signature crab cake at Wise. I'm going to have that. But I also, we're talking about what we're going to make my crab cake. Like the way you're saying, I want Worcestershire, I want dry mustard, wet mustard, I want this mayonnaise or triple yolk mayonnaise, whatever your thing is, J-O, Old Bay, whatever it is. I'm trying to figure out what my thing is. So the only way to do that, we're going to get a couple pounds of crab meat. I'm going to go total chopped. I want all the ingredients. I want oregano, parsley, Old Bay, white pepper, black pepper, red. And I'm going to try to come up with my...
Your own signature.
The thing I like the most.
Because
people have asked me, but my profile's all over the place, man.
Yeah.
I've had really cheap Fry, Dundalk, House and Neptune, Hockey Puck crab cakes that I love because they're delicious and I like it fried. And I've had Gucci jumbo lump, perfectly manicured, almost like crab imperial, delicate, and I like that too.
Yeah,
what's yours?
I am more of the I prefer broiled personally over fried,
right.
But I do like a little bit simpler. You know, I don't need it to be Capital Grill. You know, if
nothing
you remember,
wrong with that.
Angelina's back in the day. I thought
that's my favorite crab cake.
Okay, it used to be my
when people ask me what my favorite crab cake, I'd say an Angelina's crab cake.
I thought that they had probably. I agree. I think that they had the greatest crab cake around.
See, that was a profile that was not like Dundalk, and I've learned this. The Dundalk style, and this is with all respect to my friends at Costas, it has a little more Old Bay in it.
Sure.
The East Side preferred it a little saltier, a little more fried, a little more to maybe make up for some of the inequities of using a claw meat or a special meat. Still tastes like a crab cake. Not going to taste like a jump. In the same way, your steak here is not going to taste like Ruth's Chris, you know,
correct.
Aged. It's still steak. It's still delicious. It's still prepared well. It's just different.
And you know, you're right, and the fried always reminds me of Ross's or
A million crab cakes from Ross's. House of Neptune.
House of Neptune, correct.
Corral Inn, Ruggiero's. Let's go. We can go all day. Yeah. I go all day long with you with that.
And like I said, I growing up, Angelina's to me was the gold standard of a crab cake.
Well, you and I are going to go. So you think yours is modeled in that direction?
It is.
Well, I'm going to like it.
Yeah.
I better stop eating this.
Okay.
We're at the Chaucer. We're doing a Maryland crab cake tour. We're telling you about all of our friends at Wise Markets, our friends at Royal Farms that put us on the road during the Chicken Palooza month. We're here having a little crab cake, a Hootenanny Palooza in Highlandtown, Upper Canton, Brewers Hill, I don't know, East Butchers Hill. I don't know what else to call it over here. Patterson Park is what I would call it.
The 2-4.
Man, I saw Jaws at the Patterson. Yeah. I saw Amityville Horror. I saw Stripes at the Patterson. Saw a lot of movies at the Patterson. I saw a few at the Grand, too.
Yeah.
People don't remember the Grand.
No, they don't. They do not.
Well, Heidi Daniels is going to be here, and the Enoch Pratt Free Library is literally in the spiritual space. Like, you know, the Grand was right there, and the candy store was the other side of Conklin. So I got some old-school Highlandtown memories. See, people thought I just geezed about Ocean City all last month. I'm going to geeze about Highlandtown this week, Dundalk next week. I'm going to go over to Gardenville and talk to them over there and get Mike Rosigliano involved. We're going to be over Coco's with Mayor Brandon Scott at some point later on. If you missed Governor Larry Hogan's been here, you're keeping good company, man.
Yeah.
The governor wore that headset.
I'm a big fan of it.
Hey, man, there you go.
Listen,
you know,
I think he did the state right throughout the pandemic. I think he did a stand-up job, and so big fan of the governor.
I was really critical of the governor in Aftermath. When he sat with me, Don fought with him. You know, Don Moeller was your guidance counselor, too.
Yeah, and vice principal. He started out
He was VP by the time you're a little younger than me.
I think my junior and senior year, he had gotten the promotion.
So, you know, Moeller's the godfather of Baltimore Positive.
Love
so,
it.
Right? So we've known Don forever. You know, this political thing and learning the why behind stuff has been great. But he was fighting with Hogan, and I just kind of stayed. I just refereed and made jokes, you know, a little bit. But in the aftermath of it, you know, I think Larry's done a great job. You know, I mean, that doesn't say that I would totally vote for him again or whatever. I want to hear what Wes Morris say. I want to hear what Peter Franchos say. I want to hear what, you know, Kelly Schultz. I want to hear what everybody has to say.
Sure. I think in politics, change is good. It's a good thing to have some new blood coming through because, you know, you get the same people and people start to get complacent, I feel like, a little bit. And so, you know, but again, he dealt with something that, you know, we've never dealt with before. And at the end, looking back at it, I think he did as good of a job as you possibly could. You know, he was given lemons and he made lemonade out of it.
Story to me, your bar's open. We got air flowing through here on the second floor at the Chaucer and Highlandtown.
Sure.
And your businesses, the whole idea are our hospitals aren't overloaded.
Correct.
You know, we've been wearing masks because we don't have an idiot for a leader.
Correct.
You know, nobody is coming up to me telling me it's a hoax anymore. In my space here, we're 80% vaccinated. We've done a really nice job. That is leadership.
Sure.
When you catch seven marlin, you got a good leader.
Sure. And this state compared to the rest of the country as far as the rate of vaccination goes, is, you know, higher than average. And so, you know, at that point,
that's good public information.
Sure. He's doing the best that he can to keep businesses afloat. And as a business owner, I can't argue with that. You know, it was tough decisions had to be made, and good leaders make tough decisions.
You know what I like about the Chaucer, man? I'm looking out that we talk about Baltimore positive, and that's not me being trite. You know, that's like from the heart. Yeah. But from up here, I see 1, 2, 3, 4 cranes. That looks, that's got to be, that's poor Covington over there, right?
It is, yeah.
So, you know, there's cranes literally in the shot over your shoulder here, just in, that's all, it looks like Dundalk. That's right in the city line, almost Greektown, lower Greektown over there. You know, that part of building, and we're open for business, all the things Larry talked about last week, all the things that Brandon Scott will talk about later on, you know, that this is within the confines of the city. This is what our grandparents did to get us here.
Correct.
Right? Literally.
You're right.
Taking chances, building stuff, serving good tacos, yeah, you know, making good crab cakes.
We're old enough that our grandparents lived through the Depression.
And polio.
And so, you know, they had their tough moment, and they made it through. And that's what we're facing right now. You know, we've gotten through, hopefully, the worst of the COVID, you know, pandemic, and you know, hopefully we're coming out the other side better for it at the end of the day.
Yeah, I haven't even put us on social media yet. I've been really like remiss in doing this. So we'll, here we go. Brian and I are at the Chaucer. We're in Highland Town. I'm going to step out and take a break. We're going to have some celebrities, some cool people come by. People are making a difference in the community here in. See, I see Highland Town.
Highland Town's fine. So, I don't take offense to that.
You know, I mean, I know you paid for Brewers Hill, but I'm feeling the Highland Town love. We're at the Chaucer. We're back for more on Baltimore Positive right after this.